What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. Sorry for being a little late tonight. My guest had to reschedule, so I wasn't even going to do the show. And then luckily, I reached out to my good friend in this conspiracy world, Bob's Lessons. So he'll be joining us any second. And I got a few topics with him that I wanted to talk about. Just some different things. And but yeah, so we're waiting for Bob, but it's so not like this community is just so awesome. People are, it's like such a friendly, and I know it's all on the internet and it's not like in real life, but they're like, I've met people from Twitter that in real life, and it's really like the truther community or whatever you want to call it, are awesome people all around. People like Bob that's gonna come on here. So he'll plug his show too, but go check his new podcast, Question the Narrative. He just did his second episode with another awesome guy, James R. James is probably one of the most like knowledgeable political people that I listen to. So I always enjoy that, even though but we don't all have to agree with that, what everyone thinks and feels. I'm sure you've heard, if you listen to my podcast regularly, I've totally, and I'll talk to Bob about it too, but I'm at this point of thinking that everything, the economic systems that we argue about, communism, socialism, capitalism, are all just there to create strife between us and to create enemies that they can prop up and take down and fuel the military industrial complex. The top 1% do not care about what economic system we have. They control the top regardless. The only way that they don't control the top is through a nationalistic people. And when I say nationalistic, I do not mean an ethno nationalist. I don't mean that in any way. All I mean is that if you're in America, you are an American. And if we all, strive to the same goal of having a successful country, a country that didn't have open borders, all those things, that is what they fear the most. All right. So here's Bob. Let me get him in.
Hey,
Bob, I just introduced you, but I'm going to say it again, dude. Thanks for coming in when it was crunch time, dude.
Oh, dude. Oh, nope. This is what we do, man. This is what we do for each other. You've definitely come in crunch for me more than one time, so I'm happy to return the favor. Dude, I think I owe you one, too, man, because something came up last week when I was supposed to come on the show.
You don't owe me anything, my friend. Anything.
This is cool, man. So I got to hang out backstage for a second.
Yeah, dude, right? I love it.
There was no cookies or sodas or anything.
Do you use StreamYard or no?
No, I haven't used it yet. I use Zencastr. Granted, I've only done two episodes. So, I'm not the seasoned veteran like you. So I don't know all the tricks quite yet.
Seasoned, Bob. You are better. Your video, music videos and your photoshopping skills are beyond wherever I will get. My friend.
Well, do you remember when I called you in a panic last week because I spent 3 hours just trying to get because anybody that's ever done, all right, if you haven't done podcasting before, let me tell you the stress of people like Jack who've been doing this for a long time. The little things that you don't understand about podcasting. I spent 3.5 hours trying to get an image to fit the exact dimensions and bit rates and all this other shit. So that it will fit properly on iTunes. Otherwise, my podcast wouldn't even load on iTunes. So I called Jack, just in a panic trying to figure out.
But I was zero help, dude. That was, I don't know why. Did you do that artwork for your cover?
Yeah, I did that artwork in a program. And, there's apparently there's a lot of converters online that can, automatically change, the dimensions and all that other stuff. But, we're here now, man. I just released my second one earlier today and, had James R on, and you'll be on next week. So I'm excited about that as well. Just,
Yeah, dude. Well, so I have a few and I already shouted it out, but so we'll put the links and stuff in the bottom when we post it. But so I wanted to say something about how you turned down a job, your career, something that you love to do. You actually did what all the tough people on Twitter say, just get fired or whatever they say. And, so few people could do that in crunch time, but that's truly something that speaks such volumes about your belief in the in freedom, and as corny as that sounds, it, like, that's seriously an amazing thing if people don't know that.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just I'll just kind of give the basic premise of what happened. So I took a job at my local radio station, and you know, they brought me on board. They scanned through my social media and, to my surprise, decided that they wanted to hire me on terrestrial radio. They were doing something different. It was more of a, I don't even just want to say conservative, but more middle of the road. So right. I'll just give you kind of an idea. Dan Bongino followed us, and then Ben Shapiro. The reason why I say Dan Bongino is because it's actually relevant to the story. So about 2 months in, I get a call from my boss saying that the company is going to institute vaccine mandates throughout the entire company. So that's all 100 stations, not just mine, the entire Cumulus Media umbrella. So yeah. My station didn't make that decision. Their hands were tied. So they knew when they hired me that I was not going to take this vaccine.
Right.
I applied for the medical and religious exemption, which were both denied, and they terminated me on October 11th. You know, there's certain legal things that I'm going through right now, but those are just kind of the basic facts. But yes, I did walk the walk, and it's not to gain attention or anything like that. I did it for my own personal medical and religious beliefs. And, you know, like you said, walking the walk is way more important than talking the talk. So yeah. Now we're on the other side, and I'm back in the wild, hunting wild game for food, and you know, begging for retweets and likes, which is where I'm comfortable.
Dude, that's a perfect, but that's a good play. I've told Bob before we like talk, and if anyone can do it by themselves, it's, you know, not by yourself, but start your own, like. You have such a good, you're great at talking on the you know, this format. Mm-hmm. You're musically talented. So if anybody can do it, you're like an artist, you know, now you have like,
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You gave me confidence though, because, you know, I was like, you know, man, I'm on this show with two other idiots, and you know, you're out here doing 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours by yourself oftentimes. And that's hard to do. You know, what I noticed with my first episode, about 10 minutes in, I realized I'm going to have to imagine that I'm speaking to somebody, because this is very difficult. Yeah. So I literally had to have an imaginary friend with me that I was acting like I was talking to in order to get through it.
Dude, no, you did. You did a great job, dude. Seriously. So I wanted to show this video first, since it related to, so this one I didn't bring up, but it's kind of an old one. Let me just hit the, but it's about the pharmaceutical. Share screen. All right, here. So let's make sure it'll play.
Did you spend, did Abby spend on litigation and settlements from 2013 to 2018?
I don't have that number off.
This is a huge pharmaceutical company.
$1.6 billion, $2.45 billion on R&D, $1.6 billion in litigation and settlements. What about marketing and advertising? How much does Abby spend on that?
Well, marketing and advertising, we spend about $4 billion a year.
$4
billion. Dude. $1 billion. How about executive compensation?
This part, too.
2013 to 2018.
It's probably on average about $60 million a year.
Try 334 on her size.
Now, wow. She had the numbers.
I know, dude. I know.
And shareholders, stock buybacks and dividends to enrich your shareholders from 2013 to 2018.
Well, stock buybacks, if you actually look at just pure stock buybacks,
this dude just looks like a sleazeball.
It looks Photoshopped.
Yeah. So, I mean, you get the point, but basically, I was showing that because it's just mind blowing to like that people still think this huge company that they, you just heard all these numbers, that means that they're spending all of these billions of dollars and they jack your price up because of that. They're, it's not all for research. They only spent like $1.2 billion on research. They spent it all on manipulating their stock to make it higher. They spend it on bonuses and all this stuff like that.
Do you remember when the Clinton Foundation, we saw their tax returns, and you saw that basically, like, you know, because with a lot of these you know, philanthropic endeavors and organizations like the Clinton Foundation, you can tell the good ones from the bad ones in the Clinton Foundation. It was like 90% of like the money coming in was going towards like other expenses and things like that. You know, it's the same thing. It's all going to kickbacks. But the dangerous thing with the pharmaceutical companies is that, like you were saying, they were manipulating the market to enrich. It says right there, actually, to enrich their shareholders. So the other thing they're doing is they're manipulating the data, which is talked about a lot in the book, How to Lie with Statistics. And then the last thing they're doing is part of that money and the manipulation is designed to discredit their competition, which is something that doesn't get talked about enough. Part of discrediting your competition is creating language in the marketplace, for example, anti-vax, right? Or, you know, labeling anybody an anti-vaxxer that just questions big pharma. So all these things kind of go hand in hand. And it's just unbelievable that people will defend these big pharmaceutical companies ad nauseum and call you all these kinds of names just for raising the question saying, hey, I have a question about this vaccine or this treatment, or why is this price so high, or why are they not talking about this treatment, which worked for me, but you know, they're suppressing information here, but promoting drugs that are making me sick.
Right. Well, dude, and also what's like crazy. So like, you know, you have to send your drug to clinical trials. So they have an idea of like a compound or whatever. They say, all right, I think it's going to do this. So they test it on animals. Then they're getting results. Then, so what they do though is a lot of times halfway through the trial, they realize so that maybe the goal was to reduce Alzheimer's symptoms. Well, halfway through the trial, they realize, oh shit, it's not actually doing that. So what is it doing? And so, like this one example, I forget the company, but they changed it from reducing Alzheimer's symptoms to lowering a protein in your brain. So does this protein in your brain mean Alzheimer's symptoms are decreased? No. But so then it does that. It reduces this protein, which has no correlation, and it doesn't harm anybody, you know, lots of people. So they get it passed, and then they have their marketing people figure out a way that they're not lying on their TV show ad. And then they sell the shit out of it. And like one round of this med costs $2,000 or something insane like that. So that's all. Like, there is so few drugs that have been invented in the last like 50 years, you know, besides our, like in the back, penicillin and antibiotics and all those things, but there hasn't been any new huge inventions that are extending life in any way.
Right.
But look how huge this system is.
I mean, just think about it. And there's only two countries that do direct to consumer marketing too. So we have to understand, I think it's us in New Zealand, coincidentally enough, and I could be wrong about the other country. All these things are really important, because when you have direct to consumer marketing, that's where all the deception comes in, you know? It's just the proverbial, you see like a commercial of like, you know, let's just say like a dick pill or something. And, you know, like an old couple's like hanging out in a park, sitting on a bench, and they look happy. Yeah. And then at the end, it's like side effects may include heart attack, anal bleeding, and death or something, you know? And you're like, wait, hold on a second. Can we slow that down? Did you just say anal bleeding and death? You know, like those aren't side effects. Those are effects. Okay. Right. If the side effect is worse than what it heals, then that, you know, that could be problematic. But I agree with you. And even with antibiotics, we run into problems because we're seeing with this virus that viruses and bacteria, they evolve and they morph and they mutate. And so there may come a time in which antibiotics are no longer effective.
Right. Because people take them for everything. They go overboard.
And I'm not saying antibiotics don't save lives. They do. They've saved my life. You know, they're very effective. I'm just saying anything created in a lab, nature finds a way.
Yeah. That's a good line. It's powerful.
Yep.
Yeah. I just wanted to show that because I thought it related to your... So the next... video, I think I'm going to do that we talked about before, and I'm sure everyone's seen the Ray Epps video, but I'll play it real quick. And then I saw the other one, so let me just hit share again. One day I'm going to have this even better organized.
No, this is cool, man.
All right, screen sharing,
backstage passes.
I need to get back tomorrow. I don't even like to say it because I'll be arrested.
Well, let's not say it.
We need to go. I'll say it. We need to go in
Do you have one marijuana cigarette?
What's up, fellow cool kids?
Look at this guy.
Dude, right?
We're gonna go streaking.
And then Baked. This is Baked Alaska. Do you know what Baked is?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. He's questionable too, I think, but regardless.
Look at this guy. And here's my question. Look at how he's dressed. Okay, did you notice how many people with backpacks ended up inside the Capitol? That's important because I saw the same type of people, you know, during a lot of the, what's the guy's name? Lloyd in Minnesota.
George Floyd.
Yeah, like Lloyd something, Floyd, whatever. Lloyd, I'm actually glad that name is out of my, front of my memory bank. But there is an important thing, and it's a real thing. This isn't a conspiracy. These are called, you know, you can say COINTELPRO. These are also what's called agent provocateurs. And their design is to provoke. They are agents who are designed to provoke what otherwise would be peaceful protesters into being more violent. What it's like, it's like they're the spark that lights the fire. So, for example, if you have a mob of 100 peaceful protesters and one person throws a Molotov cocktail through a window, 98 might look at that window and then go, yeah, or even 20 might go, yeah. And it just starts the avalanche of violence, you know, that's their design. But they're so easy to spot. They're either wearing black or military garb. They'll have backpacks. They'll have really expensive equipment, right? So, I mean, it's just like what I was saying, like with, you know, when you have a cop that's trying to play a hippie, asking a hippie for one marijuana cigarette, like, dude, like we can tell that you're the popo here. But, you know, and this is real because agent provocateurs have been spotted and found at peaceful protests. And so this is something that was very apparent on January 6th, is that people like this Epps guy were in uniform and got people riled up to storm the Capitol, and that it was everybody was in on it, including, you know, the security that was there. It looked like, you know, night security at a museum, you know, like where it was just a guy with a flashlight, you know. Am I surprised by this? No, but is this still revealing and it's important? Yes, but you know, I guarantee you this story is going to get just suppressed. What do you think about it?
No, dude, I totally agree with, like, that's perfect with the spark that sets it off. Because that it's not like most people aren't, when they're protesting, they're not looking to burn and loot and destroy things, but it's just like that mob mentality is so powerful. There's all those names for like the cert, like Dunning-Kruger effect. I don't know which one it is, but it's like if you go along with the group, even if you know it's wrong, you're going to go. A lot of people, especially maybe weaker willed, less confident people, will follow what the mob is doing. So if you can get the mob riled up, and they have studied so well, they know what we're going to do before we even do it, and what it'll take.
Yep.
That's
what you said. Like, they do psychological, you know, studies of all different kinds of groups to know what would set it off. Now, granted, the execution isn't always what they expect it to be, but you saw even on January 6th, while this stuff was happening, and I really want people, if they didn't look at the video, to go back and look and just count how many people are wearing backpacks. I don't know about you, but
I never noticed that.
Just go look at next time you're there, or just look at people that aren't dressed in casual clothes. Like, in my opinion, most of those are agents, agent provocateurs, crisis actors, whatever you call them. Right. But it looked like a movie setting. Like, you had almost like rafters on both sides, like leading you, funneling you into this area. And like the scene was set. It was kind of scary to watch. I remember as it was unfolding, I was like, this looks like a movie being played out right now. Mm. And then January 6th was the excuse that was needed to start pulling the plug on everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the second video that I just saw today.
Okay.
Any second.
If you're in politics, I've been trying to get a hold of you. We met January 5th.
We're patriots.
Well, do you remember me from January 6th?
I understand that, but I can't see you.
Are you still under investigation by the FBI?
But look at this property.
Are you a federal informant?
Wow.
Is there a reason why the FBI took you off the most wanted list?
Are you a federal?
But yeah, so I think most people know that, but he was on the FBI most wanted list as the sedition hunters hunting down the people that tried to commit a coup. And clearly he's on lots of video, but he has this beautiful property. Never been brought in, was removed off the FBI most wanted list. I mean, it's just absurd right now.
Yeah. So he was on the FBI most wanted list and then coincidentally removed from it.
Right. Right.
And now he can't speak on it.
Right.
That's his property.
Yeah. It's his property. It's
looks like I see some palm trees or something. Where is he?
Are you a federal informant?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if it's palm.
Right there. Oh, never mind. That's not palm trees. It's just blocked by a shed.
Okay. But dude, even I did a tweet like that John Sullivan, the Uber driver for. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that guy? He was like at a BLM protest. He said, "We're going to rip Donald Trump out of the White House." His adopted dad, which I found very interesting because so many people that are like this are adopted, right? Or they have traumatic events. Mm. But he's adopted with his brother, and his dad is an admiral in the Air Force in information or spy. Like, I forget the title, but he's like a spy guy for the Air Force. And his one son is John Sullivan. The other son runs a right wing, quote unquote, extremist group. And so he's on the other, what are the odds?
So they're on both extreme ends of the political spectrum. Right.
Yes.
This reminds me a lot of, and I know we've talked about this ad nauseum, but it reminds me of just like Jim Morrison, the son of, a Navy, high ranking naval officer that was on the Gulf of Tonkin. It's like all of a sudden he becomes like the poster child of the anti-war hippie movement,
right.
So it's like, they breed these kids that just end up like, complete extremists. But it's an interesting point you brought up about being adopted or having some type of psychological issue, because it's the same way that predators work. Right. When you're preying on somebody, you prey on the vulnerable. Like, with the Franklin scandal, they were doing that out of a foster home. So it's people that, don't have strong families. Right. People that are more susceptible to, being brought in. And there's not that many people that will remember them if something were to happen or if they were a patsy or a fall guy.
No, you bring up a good point with the family, because you're young now, you're missing that key piece, an adult that, you have no adult affection or love, and somebody comes into your life that acts like maybe they do love them, but they adopt you or assume care of you. And the power that those people must have over these kids runs deeper probably than your normal parent-child relationship, because these kids were lost for maybe 7 years. They had no parents, and now someone comes in. I just imagine that could really be beneficial to somebody that's trying to create, like they did Jim Morrison, or create somebody that can be leading a movement or instrumental.
It's interesting that you say create, because I mean, think about that. You're creating something, like you're using, it's a eugenics experiment. Even if you're not performing like a physical experiment, if you're doing psychological operations on a human being to create something that normally would not have been that's a eugenics experiment.
Right. Yeah, dude. And I know we always talk about MK Ultra, but that's just such a, I just read that book on Alan Dulles, The Devil's Chessboard. And the stories that these people, I mean, they are so ahead of the time that nobody even recognized that they could do this in the 1950s and 60s, but they created so many people like this, like that one guy in the book Laurel Canyon.
He
fell off the map, and then he came back 13 years later. Or he said, I forget what his name was. He was but he released some crazy alien CDs and stuff eventually. I think he died. But at one point he said that his old name was dead. He killed him. And now he's reborn as this new guy, having two personalities in his head.
But
yeah.
I mean, it could have been, I've read that the MK Ultra, that type of stuff, it wears off, after time. So it's almost like a split personality. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
That's why We've talked about the No Mercy podcast about like these celebrity glitches, you know, just like we're in the middle of nowhere. Like it's just like that scene out of Zoolander where you have that in Zoolander, he was MK Ultra'd, and then the song Relax cued him to commit an assassination. Right.
Right.
So it seems like some of these celebrities either have cue words or something from their handlers. The most popular one I remember is Al Roker, who is in the chubby weather dude from the morning show. So he's in the middle. I mean, and he's like one of the most happy-go-lucky dudes, and like right in the middle of a broadcast, somebody says something. It's like either Jesus or Christ, and when that word is said, he's like laughing and he just goes blank, and he just it almost looks like a shutdown, like you know that Microsoft like shutting down sound.
Right.
Like he just shuts down and he just stares at the camera and he doesn't blink for like 40 seconds.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder if you can find that.
It's a crazy.
Try.
Let's just do this.
Try DuckDuckGo.
Oh, dude, you're right. I'm using Google Not being a good conspiracy person.
No, it's fine. You probably find it better. Let's see. Anderson Cooper mocks Al Roker's frozen pose. It's bringing you to freaking CNN. It's such a funny clip, dude.
I know.
So here's what they're trying to do. This is actually a good way to analyze this. So they're trying to bring attention to it and just kind of joke about it.
Yeah.
In a mockery way.
Yeah.
What's up with Al Roker? Okay. Let's see what Anderson Cooper has to say. Anderson Vanderbilt.
Oh, dude, right?
And then this happened.
Yeah.
That's exactly how you have to have a certain amount of distance between the body and your eye.
Yes, like they say in Catholic school, leave room for the Holy Ghost. Anyway, there is a lot of memories today, actually. It's a big day in music history.
35 years ago today, Elvis Presley passed away. The king of
Look at this.
Right, like even if you're a humorous guy, this is beyond a joke, you know?
That's scary. That's scary. And the thing is, it keeps going too, and they cut off. And did you notice it happened right after he said Holy Ghost?
Yeah, that's right. I haven't noticed that before.
Yeah, she said leave room for the Holy Ghost. Notice how she didn't even say Jesus, leave room for the Holy Ghost. And so then he just shuts down. Scary, man.
Yeah.
Well, it could be nothing.
Yeah, it absolutely, but there's a lot of examples of that. But if anybody that like listens that struggles to believe that they actually did this to people, Alan Dulles, the creator of the CIA, he did it to his own son because his son got shrapnel in his head in Korea, and his son, they put him in like those the float chambers, you know,
sensory deprivation.
Yes, they did that for weeks on end, hitting him with that psychic driving, like the same, you know, I mean, they tortured this kid. And his
like Clockwork Orange style.
Yeah, dude. And that was Alan Dulles' own kid. And he knew what they were doing. Like,
so using him as an experiment.
Yeah, dude. Isn't that insane to do that to your own son? Because he was like kind of messed. He like was struggling with memory and things like that. And they tried all these. So imagine if they actually wanted somebody to fulfill a role or to be a certain way. They would have no problem doing that.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. And then here's the other thing I think about it is like I really feel like once they're done with them in a ritualistic manner, they dispose of them just like you would a greyhound dog once they're done, you know, performing on the track,
right?
You know, that's why, you know, you've seen a lot of these death at 27 celebrities. You know, and Kurt Cobain's one of them. I talked a lot about how I thought the whole death around Kurt Cobain was very strange, and that Seattle scene is eerily reminiscent of the anti-war movement of the 70s. So I do feel like once there's no use for them, then they dispose of them, just like they would an animal that has no more use.
I had this guy Don Jeffries on last night. Have you ever heard?
Just gonna ask you that because I haven't listened to it yet because you just posted yesterday. But
yeah.
Well, listen, it's right up my alley. It says entertainment, deaths and assassins, gradualism, degeneracy and tyranny. So tell me.
Well, so he brought up this. It's from the same guy, Dave McGowan, on his website. I haven't gotten to look through yet, but just using entertainers as ways to do huge things to the public. And he I guess that Dave McGowan guy had a theory. So John Wilkes Booth was a Freemason, like his photos with his hidden hand. And I think he makes the claim basically that Abe Lincoln wasn't actually assassinated. They just used John Wilkes Booth to act this out, to fake this. It was a fake event. And they did it because Abe Lincoln, you know, served his purpose. And in those days you could literally disappear. And so they fake killed him. Isn't that a crazy theory?
Well, no, it's not, because I read a book by, sorry, I'm trying to add some more lighting. I read a book from Jesse Ventura that elaborated even further on that theory, that Abraham Lincoln was the first real, like, true American conspiracy theory. There's a lot of stuff behind this Dr. Mudd character as well. So, no, it's not surprising to hear that, that, you know, because it fits the same narrative, right, of the Patsy that has this elaborate scheme to kill the president, but then gets caught immediately.
Right.
Yeah. And then you have the parallels between Lincoln's death and JFK's death.
Yeah.
You know, like all the synchronicities. So
right. And that's beyond just coincidence. All of those, you know, like what he hid in the library, all those things. Like,
dude, it was like odds? One went from a library to a theater, the other one from the theater to a library, and the name of the theaters and the libraries were syncing up. And
right.
You know, somebody's like doctor was Kennedy, the other doctor was Lincoln or something. Like, it was
right.
It's just, it's a never ending list of synchronicities, and you know, I can look them up, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like most people know some of those.
Yeah. I'm sure you've seen those, but so I thought that was a really, so like maybe entertainers out of that drive to be famous or to have power, they have always been like, even Shakespeare, I think they said he was like, you know, no one knows who Shakespeare was. And, but it would be like Harry Houdini. That's in Dave McGowan's book. Harry Houdini was a spy for the US OSS or whatever the State Department was at that time. And he was such a good spy because he could go travel in places under no, and people loved him. He would have these huge crowds. And in his off hours, he would get access to things that nobody else had access to. And like in Germany, he was spying, and all these places, he was a spy for the US government. So this is, and that was in the 1910s, you know, like 1910 and 20s. Like so they've been using entertainers as spies and people to have a good cover story forever. Forever.
Yeah, if you think about it, entertainers are the best way to not only cover your message, but to spread it to a lot of people, you know, at one time. That microphone is very powerful. Yeah. In my first podcast, I talked about how important comedians are. One, because I think they're the greatest philosophers and storytellers, but also because they're very dangerous. They're the people that see the Matrix, see the zeros, and at least the good ones. I'm talking about the good ones.
Yeah.
Take away the laugh track of like George Carlin, right?
Right.
For example. And you have a really great philosopher, but you also have somebody that's saying stuff like this, like there's a secret club and guess what? You're not in it.
Right.
You know, he talks a lot about these secret clubs. You know, you're not in it, this club. And that's very dangerous to people, because when you have somebody with a microphone and that much influence that can sway that many people, then, you know, they become a danger. However, if you can control it by planting operatives in the scene, you know, in comedy, in entertainment, in music, you know, people that will help you, you know, help steer the population in any direction, you know, whether it's diluting the anti-war movement or whether it's creating a generation of, you know, like the Gen X, you know, it's just, listen, man, the 90s was a depressing, disgusting. It really did. It bred a bunch of just like dystopian, you know, degenerate style people. It destroyed people's belief in faith. And, you know, it took me a while to get out of it.
I agree. Yeah.
Even just from a frequency standpoint, you listen to a lot of the grunge and the music that came out from the 90s, and it's very depressing. You look at the lyrics, it talks a lot about suicide and death. And so, you know, I think that's, I don't think that's an accident that stuff got out.
Dude, and I talked about this last night, but Don, I never thought of it this way, but think of like, that even things like the teenage angst with your parents of being a rebel and things like that, that stuff didn't start until like the 50s or 60s when they had these TV shows and like, you know, the cool bad guy like Elvis and all these people telling, oh, you don't get along with your parents. Like, that didn't exist
right
all of history. But now all of a sudden, like, so what would be the purpose of telling kids, oh, you're just going to rebel against your parents. You're not going to listen. They don't know. And all programming us subtly that we don't notice, but
well, it's a gradual thing. And here's the other thing, what it does, it turns you away from your parents. So what happens is when you don't have faith in a higher being, when you, you know, when you've been trained to, you know, like you said, with the teenage angst, what happens is pop culture becomes your God. Pop culture becomes your mommy and daddy.
Nice.
You know, it becomes your best friend. So you go with the culture. And then, listen, I mean, even me, my friends knew way more about me than my parents. And looking back on it, if I had sided with my mom a couple more times than I did, you know, I probably would be in a better place if I'd listened to her more, which I'm assuming I would have, had the pop culture not kind of trained me to rebel against your mother as if she's like, you know, some type of enemy, you know, which, you know, they're not. They come from a position of care. I would wonder, you know, just how children treated their parents, you know, before this became a thing. You know, I don't know if it's something that was always there, but I do know that children way back in the day, I mean, they were put to work, you know, as early as, you know, 8, 9 years old. So the idea of childhood was much shorter.
Right. No, I would be interested to find out too, but I imagine, you know, everything, but this is a perfect segue for, let me do this.
Sweet.
So I know, I hope you work on your, Bob, your songs. Did they all get taken off YouTube already?
Not yet. Two of them got taken off of Twitter, but I just got copyright claims.
That's right. Yeah. I didn't know. Didn't it get demonetized then because of that?
Yes. My whole channel is demonetized. And the thing is I think I fly just enough under the radar to stay afloat.
Yeah, no, dude, but you don't say now, as you see it, the restrictions are, as long as you don't talk about, you know, COVID, then you're all right. But yeah, so Bryson Gray, his song is number one on iTunes, and I want your, but before I get your opinion, I just think, you know, I bought the song just to support him for 99 cents, but
good,
this is like saying to all of us, like, if we come together, like, we could have actual power, but they want us to think we have no power.
Well, these are small signs to show that we actually have power. And I talked about this yesterday with James R. So I'm kind of just going to reiterate some of the things he said, because he brought up some good points. Whether or not you are pro MAGA, pro Trump, whatever, this besides the point, which you have to look at this is from like a psychological standpoint. What's happening is Bryson Gray, who, I mean, think about it. He didn't even say FJB, right? He said, "Let's go, Brandon," which figuratively means FJB, but that's not what it means. Had a song that reached number two, and then it gets canceled, and then it shoots up number one and pushes Adele off of number one after being canceled. Mm-hmm. What it goes to show is the power of, like, what you're doing, Jack, which is investing, you know, in you know, content creators, people that provide good content. And the more you try to ban us, the stronger we become. And I think that's important. And Bryson Gray made a good point too. He's like, listen, you are promoting entertainers that are talking about sex, that are talking about wet ass this, you know, talking about drugs and violence. And you're going to ban me for saying that, you know, I had one, their excuse was the line of the pandemic isn't real. It was planned. They planned it. I think that was the line, something like that.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
And so people aren't stupid. I think they think the public's stupid and that we're just going to like settle in and just, you know, go along with this. But nope, I'm very sorry. It's too late for that. And the more you try to ban something, the more popular it becomes.
Yes.
You know, it's like, what was that cartoon where if you knocked them on the head, like two of them popped out, right? And then you tried to kept trying to kill them with a mallet. Right. And every time you knocked them on the head, they kept replicating. You know, that's kind of like what's happening with us. It's like every time you try to ban it, it becomes exponentially more popular.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, dude. It's just, and I have like, you know, he doesn't curse in his songs. And just how we said pop culture controls us so much. It's just like sometimes it can get pretty depressing in our, you know, we just see everything like crumbling in ways that aren't going our way, but to see that like people came together for this, at least like there, it just shows that there is like some or it also puts out like, we always see the extremes on Twitter. We see the far right and we see the far left. And that's what makes me think the world is like that. But things like that show me that it's much more in the middle of both these extremes.
Yes. Yeah. And the other thing about it is that, this was a thing that we emphasized on my podcast too, is that the content creators are going to be the driving force of our freedom. And that's why they're going after the content creators. When one of the important lines in his song was, is he said that he won't sell his soul, you know, and whether it's metaphorical or whether it's a literal selling of your soul, there is that selling out process where you do sell your soul. And the ones that do and toe the line are the ones that get the clicks, the likes, the blue check marks, the ones that get all the play on the top 40 stations and played over and over and over again till your 7-year-old child is singing Wet Ass Pee, you know, in the living room. Right. And so the content creators, the ones that grow organically, are the ones that they're scared of. And that's why they're scared of this. I even tried to look up the lyrics to it, and without typing in Bryce, I mean, if I typed in Let's Go Brandon lyrics, I mean, you're talking the number one song. I'm telling you, I've been doing this as a musician. I've been doing this for years where I type in the song title and lyrics and it pops straight up.
Yeah.
Like
right away.
I've relied on that for years because I sing cover songs, and I typed in Let's Go Brandon lyrics and it sent me like in like three different directions other than the number one song. Right. You know, so I had to type in Let's Go Brandon, Bryson Gray lyrics in order to read the lyrics to a song.
Dude.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. And the last like thing I want, cause we have a shorter show cause you're, but I want to bring up this, let me just put it up here. So it says Pornhub traffic surged by more than 10% when there was that Facebook outage, which equals, let me try to get this screen up here. But isn't that, I can't get the screen up, but that's what it says, surged by 10%, which equals about 500,000 additional users each hour that Facebook services were down.
Each hour?
Like, yeah. So like, isn't that insane, dude? Like that.
You know what? No, because if the same thing happened, remember in Hawaii, there was that fake missile scare where like everybody on the island of Hawaii, from what I heard, Pornhub, and just located in Hawaii, it surged during that missile scare. Because I guess people were like, I'm going to rub one out real quick before the world ends. But no, it doesn't. It doesn't surprise me. It scares me. But it doesn't surprise me. But and that's the other thing. Why do you think it's free now and so readily available? You know, I went out to dinner with my girlfriend's sisters, you know, worried that her kid in fifth grade is going to have access to it because it's one click of the button.
Absolutely. That is it. That there was like one video. It said how porn usage after school gets out. So kids under than 18, most likely goes up 400% after school hours, 400%. And then they like, you know, they start with whatever regular and they start going to more graphic, more violent things.
That's like, what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. So like clearly this is free because it's that gradualism that they want to break down this healthy, you know, thing that you do with someone you love and turn it to free love of like the '70s, but even more sinister kind of behind it.
I think there's a reason for that. You know, I actually think that it's more of like an occult, like sex magic type thing that they're trying to do.
That's a good point too.
But I was thinking like, if I ever had a kid, I would love to invent something like, you know, when you steal something from a store and you open it, sprays that like dye on you.
Yeah.
You know, like I want to do something where like, if my kid opens a laptop and he goes to a porn site, it just shoots like blue dye on his face so that when I get home, he's got blue dye on his face. And I'll be like, I know what you did.
There's your $1 million invention, dude. Right. There.
That's it.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm telling you, I would make so much money, dude. Just
absolutely, dude. Well, Bob, where can everyone find you? And thanks again for doing all this. But yeah, all your stuff.
Yeah, sure. So real simply on Twitter and Instagram, it's at Bob's Lessons. You can see it in the graphic at B-O-B-S-L-E-S-S-O-N-S. I'm on the No Mercy podcast. I just started my own solo podcast, kind of like Phil Collins leaving Genesis or Justin Timberlake leaving NSYNC. That's kind of what I'm doing here.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's called the QTN podcast. Q as in Quest, T as in Terrence, N as in neighbor podcast. You can find it on Apple Podcast, Podbean, and it's now on Spotify. I just had the second episode with my friend James R. And you, sir, will be my guest next week.
Dude, I would be honored at any point. So, Bob, thanks for coming in again, dude. You really, you saved my night. So I'm super.
You saved my night. What are you talking about? Dude, you saved my night.
All right. We'll kiss later. We'll kiss later. All right. All right, Bob. Take care, man. Thanks again. All right, dude.
Bro. See you later.